Hi everyone, I'm Notando Swan Wolgeschaffen. I'm a family doctor and a life coach for other busy professionals, primarily attorneys and physicians. I coach on everything, priorities, self-care, making decisions, saying no, but most people know me for my teachings around professional and personal boundary formation. On today's call, we're going to be talking about how I have said no to patients and colleagues, and how I want to encourage you to also say no in those instances where saying no would create healthy space and time for your personal and professional endeavors. It can be extremely difficult for us to say no when we know that the answer is no. Right, especially as professional service providers, there is a push for us to be readily available, team players, always on call, right? And so learning to say no when it's important is going to be one of your superpowers that sustains your meaningful practice. I'm going to start off by explaining some of the most common barriers that I see towards saying no. And then I'm going to offer you a series of suggestions in terms of how to say no, the practical bit. I'm going to then suggest a few skill sets in addition to saying no that will greatly enhance your ability to sustain your meaningful practice. And lastly, the most important part, we're going to get into some group coaching. If any of you would like to be coached live, today is the day. As well as those of you who are curious about working with me privately one-on-one, I'm going to explain how you can do that. And as promised in our emails leading up to this training, for those of you who are here live, I have a very special gift for you. And when I say very special, I mean very special. Like you're definitely going to want to stay to learn how to access this very special gift. So without further ado, the four main boundaries that I've worked with my clients on, or rather the four main barriers, not boundaries. You see how often I talk about boundaries? The four main barriers to saying no that I have helped my clients through are really different cognitive distortions and unhelpful mindsets. Specifically, one of the most common cognitive distortions that prevents my clients from saying no, particularly in professional settings, is shoulds. I should be doing more. I should be able to do this. I should take one for the team. This type of thinking really creates an environment where it feels very taboo, very impossible, quite frankly, to say no. I remember in my first year of practice, first of all, started practice during the pandemic. So ain't nothing that I thought was going to happen happened, right? I really had to shift my ideas around what it would mean to be an attending physician to adapt to the fact that all of our care was drastically different. Not only were virtual options now a thing, but also our in-person spaces felt so much less safe, so much more risky. And so one of the virtual options that I was privileged enough to be a part of was offering cognitive behavior therapy. And see, the thing is, in Canada, of course, we do have pretty robust, comprehensive healthcare. However, much to everyone's chagrin, mental health services are not a part of that. Rather, if someone wants counseling, they need to either pay out of pocket for it or hope that they have really excellent coverage at work for what is considered to be an ancillary health service. So during the pandemic, when doctors were able to virtually offer cognitive behavior therapy, this became a huge resource to people who otherwise would not be able to afford it. Because what it meant was, if you could get therapy through a doctor, the government would pay for it. And so that's what I did. I offered therapy because I was part of a medical CBT fellowship. I completed additional training, not only to further develop my expertise in CBT, but also to be able to offer it to these patients for free, right? I, of course, was being paid, but they were not paying me directly. As part of this fellowship, it was very rigorous. There was a didactic component, but then also there was a practical component where I actually had to offer a certain amount of hours of therapy. And what this looked like was seeing a minimum of 10 patients a week for 3 units per patient, meaning each patient visit had to be an hour and 16 minutes long minimum. Okay, weird number, I know. And so it meant more than 10 hours of clinical service each week. That was the expectation. And you all know 10 hours of patient-facing work is not 10 hours of work. It's the before and the during and the after that need to be accounted for. So I was aware that the expectation here was that I should be seeing 10 patients a week. And I was tying that to myself too. I should be able to do this. I should see 10 patients, even though that really was not feasible for me in addition to my work at the Refugee Health Clinic and in addition to my work in an addiction medicine clinic and in addition to my work as the primary care provider at a homeless shelter, or more technically a respite center. And so in talking with my husband, who is not in medicine, I was able to glean different perspective. And he was like, well, you're the doctor and they said it's on your schedule. So if you can't see 10 patients, then why don't you see 8? And I was like, well, you know, I really should be seeing 10. And he was like, well, you really know, you don't seem to be able to right now. And that's okay. Why don't you just let them know you're going to see 8? And long story short, at the end of the day, after I got over my shoulding, I should be able to do this, I just informed the clinic that I would be seeing 8 and it wasn't a problem. And I decreased my load and I saw 8 people per week. And that required me to say no to their expectation of 10. Did it feel monumental to me? Yes. Was it monumental? Not really. I saw the 8 people. I still completed my hours. It took me a little bit longer. But I do think my patients were served better. Right. And certainly my schedule seemed much more manageable. And so that first barrier, again, that I see in other busy professionals is us telling ourselves that we should be able to handle a certain workload or offer certain services or do certain things. And that type of thinking can be really insensitive to our actual needs and can be impractical. I also remember in my first year of practice, I was, again, privileged enough to start up at an amazing addiction medicine clinic, one that is well-regarded throughout Canada and certainly throughout Ontario, as it provides education and conferences to other addiction medicine specialists. And so I really landed my dream job and was working Tuesday morning and afternoon clinics. In the morning, there was a rapid access addiction medicine clinic, so a drop-in clinic. And in the afternoons, I could schedule in my regular patients as well. But what I was finding was that actually my most impactful work was in the morning, and then the afternoons were strangely slow. And I'm not quite sure why this was. Partially, you know, might have been due to my own skill and my own ability to see more consults and book people back. But my mornings were much busier than my afternoons. And I found myself actually, you know, driving home in rush hour traffic after not having seen many people in the afternoon and wondering, like, why didn't I just book everyone for the morning and get home? And then years later, I had my first child. And I was like, okay, I am definitely not spending my morning and my afternoon away from her if I'm not even seeing any patients. I'll just see everybody in the morning and be able to get home to care for her after her nap. And of course, this logistically worked better with our daytime childcare plans and all of this. Not only in terms of my time, but also my ability to show up for my daughter and be there for her. And so I had to say no to the medical director at this very prestigious, very impactful clinic and tell her, yeah, I'm not going to be coming in the afternoon. And the thing is here is that this was an uncomfortable position for both me and her, and I know this. She was so gracious with me, but did bring up more than once that, you know, her afternoon coverage wasn't quite so predictable. But what I was aware of is that when I was away on maternity leave, there was afternoon coverage, and that afternoon coverage was still available. And my schedule, my roster, was still about the same size. It just didn't make sense for me to come in the afternoons, and it also wasn't practically feasible anymore in the same way that it was when I did not have a child. And so I had to say no, even though the barriers that could have prevented me from doing so were my mind reading. I was definitely all up in her head saying that she would think this and she would respond this way and she would think this about me and she would feel this way about my professionalism. I really had a lot of thoughts about what she would think in response to my decision to say no. And I think really the pressure of having a daughter allowed me to say no even so. But I know for many of my clients, when we are mind reading, when we are anticipating other people's thoughts about us saying no, this can prevent us from acting in our own best interest. This can cause us to keep saying yes. And so the second barrier that I see to saying no is just mind reading. Another prominent cognitive distortion that I see is negative fortune telling. It's very similar, right? We're predicting the future in a negative way. If I say no, this will happen, or if I say no, that will happen. So it's similar to mind reading, but it's not necessarily tied to our thoughts about someone else's thoughts. It's tied to our thoughts about subsequent events or happenings related to us saying no. So it could be, I think that I will lose a job if I say no, or I think that this patient will react in this way if I say no. All of that is negative fortune telling. And if we are negatively predicting reactions to us saying no, that again can prevent us from saying no. And then lastly, I've seen with my clients that we are trained. We have grown up in environments where saying no is seen as not being a team player, not being in service, not caring for others. And so this can create a type of guilt if the learned pattern of thinking is to create an environment of self-martyrdom. Or in other words, if I feel that I must lay down my own interest for others at all times and in all scenarios, then anytime I do not do this, I'm gonna feel guilty about it. And particularly in professional service providing, client or patient facing roles, we are expected to put our interests at the very bottom because the people that we are serving deserve excellent care. And while this is true, while they do deserve excellent care, it is not true that saying no precludes them from accessing this care. And so I just want us to be aware that certain ways of thinking make it nearly impossible for us to say no. And the most common thoughts that I see that prevent us from saying no are that I should be saying yes. If I say no, this person will respond or think in this way. If I say no, then the subsequent results, the subsequent events will be negative or even catastrophic, right? I will end my career. I will no longer be invited into these spaces. And this really gets at our biologic imperative for connection. Of course, we want to be part of these spaces and seen as team players. And then lastly, right, it is my responsibility to look after the interests of others, even if that means putting myself further down the line. Again, some variation of these thoughts may be helpful, may be valiant, may be true, but certainly not in all circumstances. And so I want you to just be aware of any of these types of thinking, because they may be contributing to your inability to say no. So when we think about saying no, I also find that sometimes we actually say yes instead of no because we're avoiding certain feelings, right? Sometimes it's uncomfortable to say no. It's just so uncomfortable. We're just gonna like roll with it and say, okay. Or we're afraid to hurt someone else's feelings. We don't want to seem rude. Or even sometimes, and y'all, I can't really relate to this as an introvert, but some of my clients are afraid to miss out on things, right? For me, I'm just like, nah, it's cool. I'm gonna be here on the couch. It's not a problem. I don't need to go. But many of you are just so phenomenal in your presence, in your desire to connect with others. And you just thrive off of being in environments with other people. And so sometimes we say yes because we just don't want to miss out on anything. The thing is, though, you can only miss out on things if your priorities aren't clear, right? You can only really miss out if you don't know what is really a priority for you versus what isn't. Because you don't miss out on things that don't matter. You don't miss out on things that aren't important. You can only miss out on things if your priorities aren't clear. So, with that in mind, here's how you say no. We first decide to do less. And this is a radical commitment to creating rest and creating space in your life for self-compassion, for reflection, and for meaningful connection. Dare I say, creating space for fun, for play, right? For what is often seen as not being productive. In order to say no, we have to radically commit to doing less. And I don't mean commit to being lazy and doing nothing, because sometimes that's what comes up in our heads. When we say do less, we're like, what? I don't want to be lazy. I don't want to just sit around. No. I didn't say do nothing. I said do less. Doing less requires intentionality, because then everything that we do, we've thought it through and we've committed to doing it for a reason. So in order to say no, we have to commit to doing less, and then we need to actually figure out, okay, of the things that I am going to do, what are my priorities, right? What are my priorities? And they may look different than your current day-to-day, and that's not a problem. That's not something to feel badly about, right? That my health is a priority, and yet I'm not finding time for regular movement. Like, let's not be harsh and self-critical about this. Let's just recognize it so that we can move to address it, right? Move towards alignment with our priorities and, in essence, with our values. Okay, so in order to say no, we're gonna decide to do less, commit to do less. We're gonna figure out our priorities, and then we're just gonna say it short, sweet, and consistently. I'm sorry, I can't commit to that right now. I won't be able to complete that by then. Absolutely not. I'm going to pass on that opportunity. Thank you. You can say no however you would like, but the key is to say it short, sweet, and consistent. Short, sweet, and consistent. Just get it out there. The quicker you say no, the less time you're going to be ruminating on how to say no, and if you should say no, and if you should say yes. See that cognitive distortion? right? Saying no does not need to be complicated. I know that it may feel so incredibly awkward, so incredibly painful, so incredibly scary, but it just needs to be said. And then it just needs to be reiterated, right? So we just say no. I did also want to mention that, and I think you've probably picked up on this, this ability to say no, to decide to do less, to figure out priorities, and then to just say it short and sweet, requires that we have other skill sets, right? The skill set of protecting our self-concept from external input, which is really our ability to be rooted in who we are, regardless of what other people say, think, or do. In order to say no, we're going to have to be really comfortable in identifying, stating, and reinforcing our boundaries. In order to say no, we're going to have to be really efficient and clear with our decision making. And most importantly, in order to say no, we're going to have to be able to practice mindful self-compassion. When we're being honest and aware, acknowledging and validating our true emotions and our true thoughts around any given circumstance. And then not only this, we're willing to address them in a way that is kind, fair, and safe to ourselves. So I hope that this has given you food for thought with regards to how to say no and why it's so important to say no. I know that this is not bread and butter. This is not a basic skill in the sense of level of ease. It is a basic skill in the sense of its essentialism to a meaningful and sustainable personal and professional life. And it is something that I teach all of my clients because it is so impactful. When we can say no to things that are draining, dangerous, or really just not of interest, then we are essentially protecting our ability to say yes to what's most meaningful for us, right? We're able to say yes to best practice. We're able to say yes to patients and clients who truly need us. We're able to say yes to spending time with our children in their early years and in their later years. If this is something that is meaningful to you, if it's a skill that you would like to develop, then I want to encourage you to pay attention to this part of the call right now and take action on this part of the call, which is signing up for a one-on-one coaching consult. If it is your job to show up for other people on a professional level, then you need to make sure that someone is doing the same for you. Who is showing up for you on a professional level? Because it's one thing to know these things intellectually. Certainly the topics that I've presented to you are all within the realm of familiarity for you. None of this is particularly new, I'm sure. You know these things. However, it's another thing to know them on a practical level where we're implementing change and implementing meaningful results within our lives and seeing these results, right? You say no to some things and free up space for yourself. How? That's where coaching comes in. I would love to design a specific coaching package for you. And what that means is I'm going to walk you through a series of very targeted questions about your personal and professional life so that I might be able to draw any patterns of thinking and behavior that we could work together to optimize. When we talk one-on-one on your coaching consults, I'll be able to elicit that information from you so that I can then present to you the 3 to 5 topics that I coach my clients on that I think would be most impactful for you. So that could be saying no, identifying priorities, decision-making, boundaries, saying no, whatever the case may be, right? And this could be applied to romantic relationships. It could be applied to familial relationships. It could be applied to professional relationships. It could be applied to creating big things like businesses and passion projects, or even just to creating more space for for rest and recovery in your life. And once you have those 3 to 5 topics, we can talk about what working together one-on-one to actually implement, not only learn, but also implement them in your life would look like. So again, the action point for this call is to book a coaching consult with the link in the comments. And then I also want to let you know about the free gift for all of you who are here live. Free gift is for those of you who know for sure that you want to get coached, but you're not sure about the amount of commitment that you might be able to have. I want to be really clear. The most valuable thing you can do for yourself is book a coaching consultation. And if you book a coaching consultation, you will also automatically get this free gift. If you are not going to learn from me what the most important skills are in the form of a coaching consultation, but you would like to take advantage of this free gift, what you're going to do is email me with the subject line free session, email me some availability, and a 1 to 2 liner explaining what you would like to be coached on, because the free gift is a single coaching session, just me and you. That's right. I never do this, y'all. So please, if you ever wanted to get coached, you're going to have to take advantage of this here free coaching session. I never do this, except for right now, because I'm just feeling very called towards the end of this year to get people coached. I know that it can be a little bit scary, quite frankly, to opt in to a coaching container if you've never been coached before. So your free gift is a free coaching session with me, and you can access it by emailing me at contact@notandoswan.com with the subject line free session, a one-liner about what you'd like to be coached on, and your availability. And you must email me today, Thursday, November 28th, 2024, because I don't do this often. I've never done it before, and I may never do it again. And it is only for those of you who are live. Alrighty, so those are the ways that you can work with me one-on-one. I'd highly encourage you to set up a coaching consultation so that I can actually design an entire coaching package for you. And if you do that coaching consultation, for sure, I will also give you a free session whether or not you decide to hire me as your coach. And alternatively, for today's call only, you can access a free coaching session with me by emailing me. I would love to coach any of you who are on right now who have a topic that they would like to be coached on. So you can just unmute yourself or type in the chat the word coach and I will call on you that way. Okay, so rather than unmuting yourself, why don't you just go ahead and type the word coach in the comments if you would like to be coached?